This is Jane Hoffman reporting live. Enjoy the song. Good evening. That was a song by John Yoder and his church, the church on Pearl Street. John is already holding on the line. I'm going to give a brief introduction. The United States Department of Justice, Civil Rights Division, and the United States Attorney General's Office, Northern District of Ohio, did an investigation of the Cleveland Division of Police on December 4, 2014. Now, this is remarkable in two senses. The Ferguson, Missouri killing that occurred a few years ago in the same year, I believe, with Michael Brown, that federal investigation determined that there was a disproportional amount of police stopping socioeconomically poor blacks and charging a variety of over expensive charges, things that were trumped up in a sense that were running the city. In other words, the lowest 30% of the margin economically was paying for the bulk of the city services. Now, what's remarkable about the Cleveland police is that it had to be done because a 12-year-old boy with a toy gun was shot within less than 1 minute of being stopped. Now, I know my co-host is going to argue that he didn't officially obey orders, but I don't even think he heard the commands. The actions were done ahead of time. The Department of Justice completed its civil pattern or practice of investigation. They have concluded that there was a reasonable cause to believe that the CDP, the Cleveland Division of Police, engaged in a pattern or practice of the use of excessive force or violation, which was in opposition to the Fourth Amendment of the United States, which says that each person who is stopped by the police should be reasonably seized and searched, including protection of property and rights. And I don't have time to go in depth because John has a long, he has a small requiem of a break. So I'm just going to read four one-sentence findings. There was unnecessary use of deadly force, including shootings and head strikes with impact weapons. There was unnecessary excessive or retaliatory use of less lethal force, including tasers, chemical spray, and fists. Excessive force against persons who are mentally ill or in crisis, including cases where the officers were called exclusively for a welfare check, and the employment of poor and dangerous tactics that peace officers in situations where avoidable force became inevitable, and it placed police officers and civilians at a higher unnecessary risk. With that, I'll bring John in. What's going on in the Dark Master realm?
Well, greetings, Jane. Should we call you the rubber hammer tonight or the soft hammer?
I would say the rebounding hammer, who's working 2 18-hour shifts back to back.
Nice. You're very dedicated. You're supporting the whole U.S. economy right now on your strong back.
And I've managed to save $1,200, so I'm not broke anymore.
Oh, nice. Well, there are several places I could recommend you could spend your money at, but I guess that would be another show.
Maybe I'll make a John Yoder doggy slush fund.
Ooh, I like that. Actually, I'm doing quite well. I have engaged in Operation Doomsday as far as paying off my bills. So I knocked out about half of my debt load, and I'm kind of in a situation where although the doggy gig is great at times, it's optional. So it's not the mandatory gig. So it's kind of interesting.
In other words, you feel like you have a handle on your debt?
Oh, you know what? Speaking of the Dark Master, continue on. I have to take a call, but I'll be listening.
Sure. I will continue. I have plenty to say, but that's fine. Just chime in when you can. This is Jane. I'm going to go back into the in-depth analysis of the investigation of the Cleveland Division of Police. Now, you have to understand that I am proud of the U.S. Department of Justice in one sense, that they recognized in certain situations over the last 3 years, beginning with Trayvon Martin, that certain investigations needed to take place. Not every situation was the same between Freddie Gray, Michael Brown, Tamar Rice, Trayvon Martin, Eric Garner, Walter Scott, and now we can add on Alton Sterling and Philando Castile. So I would like to read an opening introduction to the Mayor Jackson in Cleveland, Ohio. The Department of Justice has completed its civil pattern or practice investigation of the CDP, better known as Cleveland Police. We have concluded that, as I just stated, there was reasonable cause to believe that the CDP engages in a pattern or practice of the use of excessive force in violation of the Fourth Amendment. Now, the Fourth Amendment, I'm not going to read it tonight, but it does involve and the reason why it was created as an amendment, because it was recognized that proper police procedure was not being done at arrest. Now, people were being denied their rights. There was unreasonable search and seizures. In some cases, the police have to get a preparatory document in order to investigate somebody and permission to enter their premises, because after all, it is their private property. No, I'm not saying in every case, like, for example, let's say someone murders someone in 3 days, that you always have to pamper around the so-called suspect. But procedure does have to take place. And in many cases, we have to keep an eye on it because our society is becoming more violent, more stereotypical, and people are becoming more jaded and self-assuming in many situations. Like I've heard on many radio shows and TV discussions across the land this week, de-escalation of critical police situations has been one void or lack of training that has not taken place. I will continue with the letter now. By the way, if you are tuning in, feel free to jump in at an opening. Hello, John.
Oh, yeah. In fact, I just got off the phone, and Miss Insecurity is calling me right back. So, again, I'll hold up.
Okay. Our investigation under the Violent Crime and Law Enforcement Act of 1994, USC 14141, which is actually a section, focused on allegations of excessive force by CDP officers. Section 14141 makes it unlawful for government entities such as CDP to engage in a pattern or practice of conduct by law enforcement officers that deprive individuals of rights, privileges, or immunities secured by the Constitution or laws of the United States. The investigation was conducted jointly by the Civil Rights Division, the U.S. Attorney's Office of the Northern District of Ohio. The letter is separate from and does not address any criminal investigation that may be conducted by the DOJ. Okay, now I'm going to skip until facts, findings, and conclusions, because one of the most important facts, finding, and conclusion was that the Cleveland police, well, there was two factors. In the circumstantial situations, many of the police were not completing reports properly, or they were blocking some of their findings within the reports. Therefore, you cannot go back and fix that. That's called deception, and deception will run high. There's no way that the DOJ can go in there and try to determine what went right and what went wrong if a police officer is not properly filling a report out. Now, it's most important to be honest. Another problem that surfaced, as we stated, was excessive use of force. So I'm going to go over many of these details, but I want to get to this just one parallel 4-point bulletin that kind of sums it up. And I'm trying to scroll down quickly till the end. I'm sorry. There has to be a faster way. But I am thankful and grateful that these type of reports exist online. It's kind of like the paper trail of what's gone wrong with America. Let's start with bullet point in the back half of it. I'm going to start with bullet points 8 and 9. The Cleveland Police Department's crisis intervention policies and practices are underdeveloped and have not fully integrated these practices into its response to individuals in crisis, resulting in the use of unreasonable force against these individuals. When people experience a mental health crisis, law enforcement officers are often the first responders. In many of these situations, officers have been called to the scene by concerned family members who are only seeking help for their loved ones. Frequently, these individuals in crisis have not committed a crime. Too often in Cleveland, however, officers handle these difficult situations poorly and end up resorting to unconstitutional force against people in crises. By the way, I remember a couple of years ago, I believe it was in Ohio or Kentucky, a mentally ill person was having a crisis like this, And the police went in and shot him. It was noon. It was like the lunch hour. It wasn't dark. There was no blind spots. And that mentally, I wouldn't say ill, but that person who was mentally and disabled but just having a crisis was shot dead. I will try to have to look up the case while John is speaking. I want to jump forward to number 9 bullet point. The CDP equipment, technology, and staff planning are inadequate. It's a failure to appropriately allocate resources, including staffing and equipment, contributes to the pattern or practice of unconstitutional force. In addition, Cleveland police officers are not given the basic equipment, the physical structures, technology required to perform their jobs safely and effectively. We found that patrol officers are sent out to perform dangerous jobs without the ability to effectively communicate with the division or with each other. Consequently, all too often they are placed in a position where they do not have the ability to learn basic information about the civilians with whom they interact. Asking officers to perform their duties without adequate technology, appropriate staff planning, a sufficient professional workspace, a routine and functioning equipment is dangerous to the officer, undermines public safety, and is unfair. It also cannot help but drain officer morale and diminish their patience in dealing with members of the public they encounter. Now let's take this bullet point as a slight example. So let's say you're a police officer and you do not, they send you to a part of town where there's not adequate maps. Then they have to track these people down. Then let's say your partner, they send out two rookies, and let's just say they send out someone who are, there's two rookies, they've only both been on the job 4 months, there's not someone experienced, they may not even know how to handle all the equipment in the car. Then after the crisis is over, they have to go back to the office and make a report. Let's say the programming in the laptop is dysfunctional or there's not adequate equipment to complete the report. Let's say there's not enough supervisors on duty to answer questions adequately. There is not enough staff to do follow-up interviews with the family where the crisis occurred. There's not adequate resources in the office where, let's say, they have to look up penal codes, numbers, and put specific data in there. You know, things like that. It just creates a big problem. I did hear a little bit of background noise. John, are you available?
Yes, I am. Ready and willing.
So when you're looking across the nation, and yes, I want to put a word in for France, the death of 85 people and growing is a negative problem compiled with all the problems we've experienced this week. When you look across America and you see specific examples of police miscommunication, either with an armed or unarmed suspect, not just, you know, a black man and a white officer, but do you think training and de-escalation and things of that nature are the problem? Or do you think it's a growing epidemic of white officers just frustrated only with black people?
Well, from what I've heard, there was a gal who came out with a book recently with statistical evidence that minority officers, black and Hispanic, are 2 to 3 times more likely to shoot a black man than a white officer, mainly because white officers are concerned about the backlash. When you see videos, it's only of white cops shooting black, whether it's perpetrators or suspects. But something to consider, and that is, We can rattle off 5 or 6 names of famous cases or victims, and probably someone will show you 20 or 30 disturbing videos. And in cases where there's
misjustice, where there's excessive force, where police have overstepped boundaries, they should be reviewed, they should be penalized, disciplined, whatever the situation merits, fined, jailed, you know, whatever is just and fair. They all know the rules, the rule book, and what they're supposed to do. They go to military academy, they go through
chess. Maybe they don't know, John. Maybe they aren't adequately trained.
Well, but here's where I go beyond what you've stated, and that is invite two or three mentally ill or drunk people to your house that have some of them with criminal records or that are vagrants or street people. What do you do when they are walking around your house or your front yard or your building? Now, in your case, you're a cool person, so you may ignore them. But the typical person says, you know, get off of my lawn, get out of here. And if they don't leave, what's the next step? I'm calling the police. In other words, I have poop on my front yard, let someone else clean it up. And most of us, if you ask someone that's homeless or that's crazy or that's mentally ill, right? Like, dude, step away or get out of here. Or you could be very nice, like, sir, I'm sorry, but would you please leave? That person half the time is incoherent. They're urinating on your right by your windowsill. They're vomiting. They don't listen to what you say. Police come out. They talk to them. They don't listen to what the police say. Now what do you do? Well, you know what? I'll let them stay on your front doorstep. We got other stuff to do. I don't want to be reviewed and be disciplined and written up and have people take videos and on it goes. It's like, I'm not concerned about the police. I'm even not that concerned about the excessive force. I'm concerned about the nut that's on my front yard urinating at 2 a.m. if I have a wife or kids or children. And I think that's where, you know, times does a cop stop people a day? You know, I don't know, 300,000 or 400,000 times a day?
Well,
30,000.
It's so funny you mention that. Because in your city, Santa Monica, the homeless have more rights than in any other California city or suburb.
They rule. And the point of what I'm saying is, you know how it is with someone that a kid that's disobedient. There's a certain point where you go, come back here. If they don't listen, what do? Well, we can't spank them. We can't restrain them. It's like in the old school days, you know, my folks would say, come over here, I'm going to whoop your butt. And guess what? I went back to where and did what they wanted. How come? I didn't want to get my butt whooped. Sometimes that's how it rolls. And to me, the problem which you'll run into, you know, I may be wrong, but you and I have both worked in situations where there's cameras on us, right? I worked at Bluebird where they had cameras everywhere you went. You know, at Systematic, we had one at the front door and one in the hallway or by the warehouse, and that was it. It wasn't to snoop up so much on us. It was more for security. But these other places, it was just to snoop on us. Now, imagine you're on the job. Imagine if everywhere you went, they had cameras on you, right? You're trying to do a blog talk radio show. They got the cameras on you. They're reviewing you. Every little incident, everything you say, you know, it's on camera. Well, what happens is in the beginning we resent it, right? We go, oh, or we even make fun of it, like, ooh, look, I'm on the camera. Watch me. I'm taking a pencil. But after a while, you get used to it. It's just business as usual. So I don't mind cameras on cops.
I do have one comment, though. It's a funny comment. And then I have one more follow-up. In McDonald's tonight, there was a short little sawed-off blonde girl, probably 1.5 or 2. Her and her brother, tall yellow cones. They weren't like just, you know, like when they clean the floor and they put cones out? Well, these were tall cones. They were like 3 feet high, and they had wheels on them. And they pushed them around the restaurant running fast in a circle 3 or 4 times. The mother had trouble catching up at first. She was only 2, and he was 3, I bet. And then they ran in the Ronald McDonald House playing area, and then they, without any supervision, they came back in the restaurant and did that routine 2 more times. Now, this was a hazard because if an old man was walking by in a walker, they could have easily knocked him over. Well, finally, on the third or fourth time, after they sped around the restaurant in their high, fast speed, I removed the yellow cones from their presence, and I put it behind a table so they couldn't reach it, and I sent them back in the Ronald McDonald playing area. Because I felt like the first time the mother laughed it off, but the second or third time it was a safety issue. Now, I just want to add one more thing because I know you're on a time crunch and I want to give you enough time to talk. There's one thing when the police get exhausted from confronting things, but I listened to another Blog Talk radio show today, and they are most of them, we can assume, are trained for crisis situation, and technically that's their job. Now, six Cleveland police officers from 2009 to 2014 in a five-year period were discovered to have used excessive force with at least 39 suspects. So let's just average that out. That's like six suspects per police. Six police officers, 39 suspects. Based on reports completed by officers and reviewed by the Plains Dealer, which is the newspaper up there, under the state's public records law, few posed an imminent danger to the police and women in blue. All but one were unarmed. 14 of the 36 suspects, the cases were closed. No one was ever convicted of the way they handled it. Eight were never charged, and the other ones just went away. In every case they investigated, police supervisors at multiple levels up to the chief deemed that more than three dozen uses of non-deadly force was justified. In other words, the DOJ report contrasted with the local report, and it seems like the administration and the police brushed it under the rug. So, John, it's not just the problem with the victims that you... the drunks or the random friends that come over or non-strangers such as a husband and wife fight. It can't just be the fault of all the idiots on the street. The police have to take some responsibility.
Oh, that's fine. But what I'm saying is that, I mean, several things sometimes get glossed over. And that is, one is like, why were the police called out in the first place? Because whoever was acting like a dumbass, why are they using excessive force? Because they gave a command or a situation, the person didn't comply. And so what do? Oh, I'll let you walk away, sir. I'm going to sit here for 20 minutes and talk. You know, here's what happens. They have to talk to this person. So they spend 30 minutes talking to him like, oh, please don't move. Please. You see these videos. The guy doesn't listen. He keeps walking. So they go, stop. And so they finally grab him. They put him down. Now here's what happens. Police are frustrated, so they start wailing on them. And I guess that's where people are going, okay, we're upset about this. Okay, then those cops should be disciplined. But here's what was going to happen with policemen, because it happens to me on my work. When you get excessive rules, right? Like, take example. Someone comes into the warehouse where I used to work at, and they start picking up merchandise. Okay, well, we're supposed to help them. So they pick a few items, they walk up, and they go, okay, I need this, this, and that, it's $10. I go, well, we have a minimum of $30, right? And they want to, maybe it's like it has to be with cash or it has to be with a credit card or something. You know, we don't want to take a check because the check may bounce. And they go, well, I do have cash. It's like, okay. Well, the problem is they've already wasted 15 minutes of our time, right? We've been watching them, and then they've picked out $10 of stuff. So what I would do to get around the rules, I'd say, okay, you know what I'm going to do is if you can work without a receipt, because they're not going to sell this to you because it's under $30. So unless you want to buy $30, here's how we have to roll. I will take the merchandise. I will deduct it from our inventory. I will take your cash. I will hold it in an envelope. And the next two or three losers that come in here and buy $5 or $10 or $1 worth of supplies, I'll keep adding up. And when I get to $30, then I'm going to turn an invoice with all the stuff. It's already been deducted from merchandise, so we're not out there. And then we're going to have the sale. The company's going to get the cash. I've made 5 to 10 idiots happy, and company's happy. But here's the problem. I have $20 in my, whatever in the desk, and I've done a deal, and, the boss comes out and says, John, we have a $30 limit. What was that last sale? Is there an invoice on? We don't do that. This is not procedure. So what am I going to do the next time a person goes in? I'm going to say, I'm sorry, we can't help you. You can go to our competition or whatever, but, we have $30 minimum. Tough luck, SOL. So what cops are going to do is they're going to go, hey, I was busy. It's that loony, that keeps, that drunk at the corner, or the mentally insane dude, or the guy who's always in front of the restaurant that keeps panhandling. Maybe he's not dangerous or drunk, but he panhandles and annoys people. You know what? I have another call. I'll see it later. Or we can't. I talked to him for 10 minutes and I had to let him go. We went through protocol, and he's your problem now. I mean, cops are going to let. They're going to cover their ass. They're not going to fall on their sword over this stuff. And that's why I'm saying the problem's going to come into. That's what happens when I, it's like tough luck. You're on your own. It's like, I'm not going to stick my neck out to, help you. And I think that's
So the moral of the story is that not all the testimony is going to be relevant or coherent. Not all the procedures are going to reflect what really happened. And people are dishonest. Did I get it right?
Yeah, I think so. And they're gonna just basically wing it. They're gonna say, okay, here's what you get. It's kind of like when all the riots happened in LA, and basically the police chief said, let it burn, right? He's like, don't go in there. This is what they want. Let them have it. You want to tear up the hood? Tear up the hood. The homies are gonna run the streets. So if you make it too tough for cops, or they get too much review, they're going to go, why do I want that? I spent my whole career in training and everything. I get shot at every day. I'm always getting called out to respond to these nuts. If you deal with it once or twice, it's fine. You deal with this all day long, you get sick of it. I think you do.
Well, my friend Melissa, who lived 3 blocks off of Melrose Place, could not get assistance during the LA riots. My friend Ken got his tools stolen when he lived as an apartment supervisor in Koreatown. And I had friends who suffered as a result. But you have to understand, the rage does come from somewhere, from years of oppression. Now, in LA has a relatively good record over a course of many years. In some cases, with the Rodney King surfacing, it did have, there was an underbelly of racism in the department. But in recent years, they've only had a few cases where, I remember on Vermont Avenue in about 2010, they killed a homeless person. But considering the size of the city, the LA police don't really have that bad of a record with the way they handle. And I'm sure a lot of things we don't hear about, because someone told me that 5 Mexican died in the last 14 days by police hands, but the national news don't cover it, only the blacks. So, there's a lot of things. Yeah.
But I guess, so kind of to answer you, or the question, is there injustice? Yeah. But I have to pick sides of who I'm with. I'm with the police. How come? Because they're saving my ass. Do I worry about them killing me? No. How come? Because I don't act like a dumbass. Now, probably after I say this, I'll go home tonight and I'll get shot and killed by a cop on my bicycle. But I'm just saying, I can live with that. It's like, these guys are protecting me. I'm concerned about them because they're the only thing between me and terror. And I'm concerned about law-abiding citizens. Citizens who don't make a scene, citizens who aren't slamming doors and breaking windows, or, acting stupid, getting drunk, driving drunk, all that kind of stuff. I'm not that
concerned.
Okay,
I do have a question for you, though.
Yeah.
Okay? So let's just say, no matter what let's say you look like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, but maybe you were 4 or 5 inches shorter. Let's say you were your standard black guy, but you took your suit off for the day and you decided to wear a pair of baggy sweatpants and a t-shirt. What if you were strictly judged just because of your looks? Not, the cops can't tell if you're a church member or if you're a musician or if you praise God or were raised in a nice home. What if you were in a situation where they didn't know nothing about you and they assumed the wrong thing? And I know what you're going to say because you already said it on other shows, but I'll let you say it. But the second problem is, go ahead and answer that question. I'll add the second part.
Well, I would say if you're a law-abiding brother and you get pulled over by a cop and you're dressed down casual or you're walking the streets and you went down to the corner or Stop and Go or 7-Eleven to get even, I don't know if they serve alcohol. I think they have alcohol there, yeah. And you pick up, you know, you want some wine, you have a date, and you're walking out, and then the police shake you down. If they hurt you or if they kill you, hang the cop that did it, right? If you're compliant, if you're peaceful, if you follow their instructions, you know, the cops should face justice just like all of us. I see cops run stop signs all the time. I see them do rolling stops. You know, stuff that, you know, they're not going to get called on. I see them park on the wrong side of the street, you know, reverse. And it's, you're sitting going in front of a bank or something. And it's like, wow, I know they get to break the rules. No one's going to call them on. Who's they going to call? You know, another cop, a parking meter person? We can make a citizen's arrest. Okay, I get that. There's a double standard, but it doesn't. You know, it's just annoying. It's very annoying. But as far as do I fear, you know, fear them for my life? No. But here's the thing. You don't hear, it's very rare that I could think of. I can't think of a time cops busted into a church meeting and shot people. Cops went to the YMCA, rounded up some kids and beat the crap out of them. Cops ran into a school where kids are in class and just started wailing on people. No, it's always a guy in the street, right, or a homeless guy in the street whose rights were violated. Well, it's like, you know, all I can say is be extra careful. Be aware of this. You know, you're not 10 years old. If you're 20 years or older, you hear and you read reports, you understand. Cops are nervous. Don't give them a reason to be pissed off. But people don't. They go, okay, you know, I want my ride.
Why do you assume? I bet you there's a lot of cops that aren't nervous, like detective-level cops.
Well, here's what they're going to do. They're going to stop you, and, like, just as I was, you know, a couple weeks ago, right? And he goes, you know, hey, where are you going? They go, oh, da-da-da. You know, I'm going to Albertson's. Oh, okay. Can I see your ID? Pull out the ID, looks at it, goes, so you live at blah, blah, blah. Why are you going this way? Oh, because I'm going there on the way to work. Oh, well, where do you work? Marina Del Rey. What's the address? Why are they asking me the address? They want to see if I hesitate. They want to see if I pause. They want to see if I'm thinking up a story. They want to start, why do you work at Marina Del Rey and you're going on a bike? That's 5 miles, right? Yeah, my car is, you know, broken down, and besides, it's actually quicker on the bike than the car in heavy traffic. Well, I guess that makes sense. They're looking for discrepancies, and then once they do, you know, how come? Because I'm on the street. I've got 3 bags on me. Might have drugs. Might have. Now, here's another one. You may go, well, but it was a 12-year-old girl. Okay. Well, just think about it. If they don't shake down the 12-year-old girl, guess what a drug dealer does? His little sister or his, you know, the kid next door. Hey, kid, here's $100. Take this bag and take it to the corner and give it to my homie over there, you know. Or here's $1,000, whatever the amount
is,
right?
Well, there is a lot of these, you know, there are a lot of criminals in America. That's one disturbing fact. There's some people
right.
who are
That's,
fully sustainable.
No, that,
they
that
fully
police,
sustain
no.
themselves.
And I'm
Sorry.
Saying is, they get around stuff. So sometimes you go, well, why did they shake down this person or that person? Because a 12-year-old girl on the bicycle didn't stop. She stood on the bike, arched her shoulders back, and told the cops, I'm not doing anything wrong. Cops' first response is, who said you're doing anything wrong? You know, well, you don't have the, you know, it's like, I'm not doing anything wrong, so it's none of your business. Well, actually, I have, you know, reasonable suspicion here, so it is my business. It's like, and then it just goes from there. It's like, show me your hands. And me like, I don't have to show your hands. I don't have to do nothing. So what do you do with that? Well, little Napoleon, go ahead. You own the streets. I'm just a policeman. They pay me. You know, John Yoder pays my salary to make sure that assholes like you aren't ripping off his car, stealing his guitar, breaking into a, and I'm not just making stuff up, hit and run my car, flip the car, their car, and they're getting out of the car trying to run down the street as if we can't trace them because their car is in the middle of the street.
Okay, well, but, I think you have a disadvantage. You live in L.A., and you live around a lot of homeless people, and based on your everyday based on your everyday perspective, you know, you see things that are out of order, so to speak, not to mention that you sometimes take the bus and there's chaos alone on the bus.
Every 2 or 3 days, or nights, I should say, at 2 in the morning as I'm going down Lincoln Boulevard when I get to Venice, at every corner, there's a couple homies or a couple vagrant street people sleeping in sleeping bags. There's always some dude across the street kind of walking towards me going, hey, man, hey, brother, right? And it's always, my brother's in prison, and the last I heard, he wasn't let out, so you're not my brother.
Do they ask for money?
Oh, sometimes it's like, hey, can you come party with us? And no, I'm not going to party with you. Because I don't want to get rolled. I don't want you to run over and throw me off of my bike. Which one time I was going down, this is about a month ago, and this guy's like walking, and he starts walking faster. He starts jogging. Pretty soon he's running straight at me. And, of course, I've been watching him. I wasn't, you know, like just going la, la, la. And I went into high gear and just jammed it. And, you know, he didn't get close to me. But the point is, if I wasn't observant, you know, I might be Johnny in the street. So – and this is on the west side. This isn't in the hood. This isn't in Skid Row or downtown. You know, this is on the west side of L.A. So I'm sure big cities all have bad people or people with not great intentions.
Well, I think because you grew up in a traditional home and you're from my generation, which did have some radicals in it, especially in the mid-60s. But I think that, you know, we grew up to respect police. And in the town I live in, I find when I first moved here, I found the police to be quite predatory based on information I read in the newspaper. And one time I was going to church. It was Holy Saturday I think it was Good Friday. I was going to church and I was going to get my membership certificate that I joined the church. And it was a warm, beautiful day. It was in the 70s, which was unusual for March in Minnesota. The police pulled me over I turned from a one-way onto a one-way. And apparently I didn't turn in the correct lane, you know, like not the immediate lane, but the farther away lane. And I left my insurance information in my trunk. And when I opened allowed me to go in my trunk to get my insurance card. I had 2 tubs of papers from my teaching days. And they said, are you carrying a gun? It was all teacher stuff. And I said, no, I'm not carrying a gun. And then and they said, wow, look at all that stuff in your trunk. And then they said, why do you keep your insurance card in your trunk? I said, I don't know. I think I, you know, misplaced it there. So anyways, I felt like they were forceful and predatory towards me that day. And they were overly suspicious.
Well, wait a second. Think about that. How many people do? You're a cop. Here's the thing. If you make a mistake, you die. You know, it may be like,
yeah, but
well,
I had a dress on. I'm middle-aged, and I was going to church, and
yes,
I said I needed something in my trunk.
So you can, so basically, now let's take the cop's position. So I can basically tell that, you know, by the way people dress, whether they're a criminal or not. Criminals dress in all manners. Otherwise, we could just round them up. It's like everyone wearing green khakis, they're the criminals, round them up. It's like, no. There's some are dressed nice, some are dressed smooth, some are dressed rough and dirty. You don't know. So you start asking basic questions. Why are you getting your license out of your trunk? Some people have, or insurance.
Okay, well,
or whatever.
I have an answer for that, John, and I'm going to look it up right now. Did you know, according to Minnesota state law, that you do not have to tell the cop that you have a gun in the car, only if they ask? So, let's just say I had a gun in the car. I would have never said that for a regular traffic stop. But going back to Philando Castile, who was killed in Minnesota, I found on a tweet last night. Here, can I just read this quick? The Minnesota state law says you don't have to tell police that you are carrying a concealed weapon unless they ask. The holder of a permit to carry must have the permit card and a driver's license or a state ID card or other government-issued photo ID in immediate possession of all times when carrying a pistol and must display the permit card and ID document upon lawful demand by a peace officer as deemed in Section 626.84, blah, 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 blah. Section C. Upon the request of a peace officer, a permit holder shall disclose to the officer whether or not the permit holder is currently carrying a firearm. So in the case of Philando Castile, he actually made the mistake of telling the police officer he had it without being forced to.
True, although probably if they found out that he had a gun by any chance, you know, then that would be kind of, it could escalate too. I don't know, maybe what we should do is basically have a system of having all the minority people that live in an area with their names and addresses and just have the cops refer these people to them, like Homeless Joe. Go see Jane Hoffman. She's very cool. She is concerned about your rights. And, you know, we're just not going to deal with you guys anymore because we'll just get into trouble if we do anything. I don't know. It's like I say, if police use excessive force.
That was kind of a slap.
Discipline the police if they do something really bad. I get that. You know,
ask you a question?
Yeah.
Why is this issue prevalent in America right now? Have the police done anything wrong?
Everyone's always doing something wrong. Business people, politicians. You know, why don't we put cameras on their politicians?
But the cops aren't. The cops aren't doing anything wrong.
Oh no! The cops are. I said this earlier. We have to pick and choose what team we're on. Are cops corrupt? Absolutely. Are there bad cops? Absolutely. But I'm just saying, I'm on their team over the homies, over the street people, over the vagrants, because they're the only people protecting me. I haven't had a homeless people protect me. Oh, I mean, maybe they'll go, hey, dude, you know, you want to smoke? They don't protect me. You know, that people stealing from me, it's not the cops. You know, and maybe, you know, you've had bad experiences with police officers. I've had annoying experiences with police officers. I've had to pay tickets for stupid things. One time a cop on a bike pulled me over on the car. Like, he comes up beside my car, tells me to pull over. This is a light. I'm on Pico. So I pull over. He says, you have a crack in your windshield. It's like, I'm thinking, oh, and then one of his buddies came up on his other bike. He had backup, a bicycle. Ran down a Camaro. I mean, I should have just gassed it, but he had my license plate. But Yeah, I just thought it was hilarious. Like, all I have to do is turn the wheel and boom, boom, you know, down go two cops. But the point being is that it was an annoying, yeah, it frustrated me, sure. Sometimes parking meter people, I hate them. I think you should take parking meter people, and where there's a dangerous situation with hostages, instead of sending in the dog, send in the parking meter people first. That's how I view it. But the point being is,
yeah,
we
have some pretty brutal parking meter people in our territory too. I did want to mention one thing. Oh, go ahead. You can finish what you had to say.
What I'm saying, for me, the cops are the watchdog in the yard. And someone goes, hey, the guy jumped over your fence and your dog, you know, attacked them and maimed them or hurt them or even, you know, killed them. Like, the dude shouldn't have been jumping my fence. That dog is to protect me. So I don't question too much how the dog operates. So do I want the dog not to attack people? Yes. I want the dog to be fair. I want the dog to bark and warn people and, you know, please leave. When people, they'll push the buttons with my dog, I go, you know, and I don't have a dog, by the way. I just dog sit. But the point is, if I did have a dog, it'd be like, you crossed the line. It's like, that is my dog's job, is to keep you away from, you know, me and my loved one. If someone right now walked into your house and I was there and they started attacking you, you know what? I'm not concerned about their Miranda rights. The first thing is to stop them. The second thing, if they don't stop, just take them out. And, you know, I'm not a violent person. I'm just saying I value your life. I value your kid's life. I value, you know, other people's lives. I don't value the person that crosses the line. It's making a
okay,
scene.
Well, back up a second. Remember when you said the police are the watchdog? Well, as Don mentioned on the show Sunday night, you know, he thinks community police in Dallas may have been a mistake, but really in most neighborhoods where police are taking a community approach, getting to know people, including the regular drunks on the street, you know, the drug dealers, the petty theft people. I mean, knowing the neighborhood is the first step in being the watchdog. Of course, there's always criminal networks in every area, whether it's, you know, let's just say a fencing operation or something. But I did want to mention two things that just, it's kind of maybe irrelevant. But it's 2:52. I don't want to go past 3:10 for the show in Minnesota. You can do your conclusion.
Yeah, I think my boss gets back around 1 or 1-ish. So, yeah, I'm with you on that.
Well, no, I just wanted to mention in the case of Philando Castile, and we didn't have time to bring this up tonight because we just were too busy. He was a cooking supervisor of a Montessori school for over 500 kids. Each of those kids knew him by name. But then in other areas on different websites, they took a picture of his girlfriend holding a pack of Newport cigarettes and said something like the serial number on the cigarettes were from a robbery in the store 2 nights earlier. Okay, give me a break. I mean, you couldn't see. The picture was fuzzy enough. You couldn't see any serial numbers. So there were multi-levels of condemnation to this victim. I'm not saying. I'm pretty sure a school cafeteria person who was off for the summer wasn't robbing gas stations in his free time. I could be wrong. But the Hennepin County Medical Examiner Officer in Minneapolis did rule his death as a homicide. So no matter what happens, Geronimo Yanez, the police officer, somebody wrote on social media, his life will be ruined forever. I doubt it. But he did commit a murder.
Well, you know, then if he violated the law, if he violated procedure, and they have their own code or their own thing set up on how disciplinary panels, they review things, I'm fine with the process. But how about this? How about every time a cop is ignored and abused and assaulted, why don't we post that on YouTube? Why don't we rail against it? Why don't we get lawyers to sue people, the public, against assaulting the people that are protecting me? You don't get that, do we?
Okay, if there's two cops because that go out regularly on domestic crises or other things, how many cops do you think get abused every day?
Oh, every day people are you know, just look at any of these situations where they're using force. It's like, how come they're using force? Because like Rodney King driving 110 miles an hour, going through 20 red lights and disobeying their orders. And then when they tell him to stop, right, he's still resisting them. And do they wail on him? Yeah. Was that bad? Sure. But you know what? Rodney didn't care about anyone's rights. He got, what, $5 or $10 million.
Are you sure he went through 20 red lights? I thought he was on the Pasadena freeway.
I'm saying they chased him for how many minutes? 20 minutes, half an hour? I don't know how 10 minutes. You know what you do when you're racing around for 10 minutes. It could have been five lights. The point is he had no regard for human life or for the police officers around him or even his own life. He was extremely reckless. But people don't wail on him. They wail on the police. And there's a bunch of Rodney Kings all the time. People like that, you know. On my way home, I'm going to go past, you know, 10 or 15 people that are non-compliant, or I wouldn't hang around with them for more than 2 minutes. And I'm a loving person. Because they're just unsafe.
You know, Rod, I guess when there's someone as well known as the Rodney King case, in the end, he had his flaws, but he was a nice person. Maybe he was, I can't remember the actual, I know what the video looks like. I don't remember if he was drunk or high. But
he was hot.
I'm not going to measure the crime. Yeah, I'm not going to measure the crime against the whoop-ass actions of the police who beat the living shit out of him, John.
But no, wait a second. Listen, you're...
That's a bad example to bring up. Five of those cops were exonerated and that's what caused the riots?
Let me back up to point. I said earlier, and I said this over again, I'll say it over and over again, when police use excessive force and break the law, they're subject to be disciplined and they should be disciplined. Did we get that straight? Yes. I hope we did. But what I'm saying,
I heard
is,
it.
Yeah, and I said it, and that seems to be, but what I'm saying, you're glossing over that freaking Rodney King had no regard for people. He could have ran over, you know, and killed, you know, countless people. He put the cops' lives in danger because they're running around like crazy asses trying to run him down, right? And who knows what he's going to do. So, okay, let this guy just go. So now everyone, anytime a cop pulls up, just gun it. Just ignore it. And when you're robbing the bank or after you've killed someone like OJ.
I didn't say
and,
that. Now you're putting words in my mouth.
No. Well, I'm saying that's the reality. That's the reality. If it's like no one's you're not barking against the criminal. You're not barking against the person that's abusive or that's law. That's why these cops are called out. Because they're people are breaking the law or they're doing something.
I guess
that
for me it's easier to look at the situation individually because as the case emerges, I'm sure if you hear Geronimo Yanez screaming in the Philando Castile video, he's just scared to death. But in the case of the Rodney King thing, a couple of those LA police officers, two of the five that were up on trial, they were regular assholes. They didn't give no more a shit about him than Rodney King gave a shit about who was on the road. And I'm sorry, you could just tell in their demeanor.
Absolutely. Those are cops that should get rung up. Not a problem with that. But what I'm saying is in the world I want to live in, I don't mind if cops get a little roughhouse as long as they're keeping the order and they don't break any major rules. If they're beating up innocent people, that's bad. I'm saying if someone's giving them attitude and taking a swing at them and the cops, you know, give them a little payback, I don't have a problem with that in my world. Now, in your world, you want a peaceful world where everyone just loves each other and they just say, criminals, please stop, please. And if, you know, I'm not going to use any force, I'm just going to let you do what you want to do and I'll write you a ticket here. Just be sure to turn that in. That's fine. That's the world you want to live in. I'm just saying that bullies aren't reasoned with. And most of these people that you know, you can take a few random videos and say this was
cop abuse, but I'm just saying most of the times when they're called out against people that are just they're making trouble. And to me, it just seems in my world, it's like when a cop shows up, you need to behave. You need to respect them. And if you don't, I don't give a lot of respect to that person. Like if they disregard society's rights, it's like, you know what, you reap what you sow. It's like if the cops get a little heavy on you, fine. Because how come? Because you have no regard for society. You have no regard for our lives. So I'm not going to have much regard for yours. You know, you get what you get.
Okay, now, well, I think your general attitude determines your position. But tonight I was trying to be fair-minded, and I'm not necessarily opposed to you. I just come from a different point of view. First of all, I'm a woman, and I'm white, and I'm less likely to be stopped than you as a Latino male. However, and I am going to put that out there. I do live in a city of 86,000, and you live in an urban setting of 25 million from Santa Clarita to Long Beach. We do have different lives. But I guess from an intellectual standpoint, if I'm reading a Department of Justice report that says, and I wanted to, this is my conclusion now because I know your boss will be back. The department began the investigation in March of 2013 in the wake of serious allegations that the CDP officers used excessive force and that the division failed to identify, correct, and hold officers accountable for using force in violation of the Constitution. I won't get into the second part tonight, but I'm just going to say one more sentence. Several incidents eroded community confidence and suggested there were serious flaws in their use of force practices, including the division's ability and willingness to hold officers accountable for unlawful, improper, and unsafe conduct. If there is a culture within a police force, whether the town is 5,000 or 50,000, if there is a culture of irresponsibility, not following up with reports, not following proper procedure, not having proper training, then it doesn't matter how good the intentions are of the citizen or the police. Bad things are going to happen. Now, depending on the workload, if you're in a town of 10,000 and you only get 3 calls a day, that's one thing. But you're trying to project that there's a lot of slugs on the street with intentional bad behavior, no regard for the law. And I'm trying to propose that in certain situations, identification has been made of reforms that need to be done, then we have to meet halfway, and hopefully the people who are employed as police officers will listen to the advice, criticism, citizen review boards, panels, the federal oversight, and do something about it. And that's my conclusion.
Well, to respond to that, you know I'm a nice guy. You know I'm beyond nice. So when you hear me talking, you're thinking, "Oh, this guy's a hard ass. He's a he's this or that." And but what I'm saying is that it doesn't work with bad people. It doesn't work with people that have no regard for the law or respect for it. So I'm just saying, these people want to come up all these reforms. Just let them be cops for a couple months and respond to these type of situations and see what they really think, what reality is. That's all I'm saying. And I think they'll have a different attitude towards it. I really do.
Okay, well, I think you've some of these things you've examined in your mind, and you're pretty clear about your position, and you also have a good argument. But as things continue to take place, and this is nothing against you, it's whether it's Don's perspective or anybody else's, we all have to take into consideration what things in our community can be work more effectively, starting at ground zero, helping, as your church does, homeless people and transient people before they get to the level where they have to commit a crime. So no matter where we stand, there's always something to be done, right? Well, with that,
Sorry, I heard you. I had the mute on because my boss is calling me on the other line.
Yeah. I'm
going
to wrap it up and play Carry On so you can make your last final comment.
Yeah, I think, it just depends where you are in your life. I've come to a point of I don't want to make excuses for people's behavior. I don't want to brush off, bad behavior. It's like people need to take responsibility for their stuff. And to me, over a period of time, when you're dealing with people who aren't law-abiding or who don't use common sense, these are people that are going to have problems. They're going to create problems. And so I think they plant a lot of disorder, chaos, and rebellion against authority. And that's what they reap to me. They bring chaos, and maybe we need to have a special programs to deal with that. But the point is, I want to look out for the rights of police officers first and citizens that obey the law, people that follow the rules, people that do good. And people who don't, we're living in perilous times. And, I'm just not that about it because we all have to make the choice. Are we going to behave or misbehave? When I was growing up, if you misbehave, you got a spanking. I didn't misbehave very much. I got spanked a couple times. That's about it. Because I learned very quickly, discipline and to obey the rules. And my brother didn't. He's in prison. He got spanked a lot. So I don't know.
Well,
he
decided that the risk was more amenable than the payment of the crime, and he took a chance and he lost.
And,
by the way, when does he get out in the next two or three years?
Probably three or four, but he's a better person because of the discipline. We didn't let him go and just do what you want and be cool and it's our fault that we didn't do this or do that. It's like, no, we were both raised the same, and he met his consequence. So that being said, it's like we will see what happens. I think our society is running into disorder, into more chaos, and people will be revolting more, and there'll be more fighting against the police. And if everyone would just mellow out and follow the rules, everything would be cool. But they don't. They want to be rebellious and stand up and, read me my Miranda rights. You need a search warrant, blah, blah, blah. You don't have the right to do this or do that. Well, then as a culture, we need to figure out then how we're going to live. Just let people do everything they want and just let the homies run the streets. Don't use the cops because we're going to just belittle.
The Bible does talk about defiance against authorities, especially by young people, but my final thought is we have to take into account the large volume of media coverage, whether it's social media, people with their own cell phones. Like my friend Keisha from Miami said tonight, who's a tall black Bahamian, but she's now a naturalized citizen. Like this has probably been going on for years, but it's all coming to a head now just because of the broad range of social access and people with cameras and videos. So with that, I'm going to end the show. You got work to do, and I'm going to play Carry On because I only have three songs queued, and that's one of them.
Cool. Well,
drive your bike safely, obey every traffic sign, and don't get mugged on the bus.
Yes, and trust the homies. Let the homies run the streets, and don't listen to cops. And the world.
I'm
gonna
kick your butt sometime between now and Sunday. Okay, with that, I'm putting you on mute, and I'm playing Carry On. Good night.
Good night.
There's a choir in heaven waiting just for you. Yeah. And why would you stay down here when there's so much there for you?
Remember, if you're a police officer and you're frustrated, you're a human being just like everybody else. Try to think of the triggers that make you frustrated. Think about your beat and the type of people who live in your neighborhood or in the area you work. With that, I'll end the show. Thanks for joining us, John, and good night.